Good afternoon, Shadow Hill. So this is Bob Furring, all by myself for a change. The reason I'm talking to you is I'm going to present a slide presentation of a wonderful program here that I've just learned about. A man named Bill Shinsky opened the Coachella Valley Arts Center in 2008. It's located in downtown Indio, and most of what they do is provide working space for artists to come in and do all kinds of different art projects. So he's going to be telling you about that. This is a wonderful program that is going to get enlarged. He's going to mention a program that he's doing for veterans with post-traumatic syndrome, and that is going to happen. So hopefully, if you know people in the Veterans Club, you can tell them about this. For people in our various creative arts clubs, they are going to have an open house on March 21st between 2 and 5 p.m., outdoor viewing. And then there will be a real open house where you can see the artist studios on April 9th, 10th, and 11th. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bill. Thank you for your attention, and I hope you enjoy this.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, everyone, for having me. Wow. Where to start? I'm not technically savvy, so have patience with me, because I'm gonna take you on a whirlwind tour of how this art center has grown. And before I get to the visual presentation, I need to explain that it started because of the knee. I've always been involved in the art scene of wherever I've lived, because that has been my profession since the 70s. And people were calling and saying, are there any decently priced studio spaces in the valley? And after some research, there weren't. I found out that, you know, the only space that was available was commercial space. And commercial space is not cheap. So I thought, well, how can we alleviate the situation and get artists places to work and to show work in a more financially reasonable way. So what I did, I was involved with a nonprofit organization, and I wrote a letter to every city in the valley, telling them who we were and what I was writing about, the need that existed amongst the arts community in the valley. And I didn't hear back from anybody. So I waited a short while and wrote again. And the only city that answered me was Indio. And they said, well, you can come down and see what we've got here. There may be some buildings in the city that you could possibly use. This was in 2008. So I came down to Indio, looked around. And there was a building at the corner of Miles and Town, the old Skarna building that had been a party planning and fabrication hall. And so I figured, okay, well, this should work. So I spent 18 months cleaning the place up. And we had our first show there, just to show people the possibilities of what could exist in the town of Indio. And we were just beginning to get situated and work when the building, because we wanted to really change the building because of studio space and the things we needed because of studio space. And the city engineers came in and looked at the building. And he walked up to me and said, if I was you, I'd leave. What? if I was you, I'd get out of here because this building is going to fall on your head if there's a big earthquake. Because it was built at a time where they were not using rebar. So the reinforcement was almost non-existent. And the concrete was beginning to powder. So I thought, geez, all my hard sweat labor. So I was taking a walk downtown, kind of feeling sorry for myself, and came across a building that is two doors away from City Hall and faces the east. And the roll-up door was open. And I figured, So I walked in. There was no one in the building, but it at the time was being used as an upholstery house. So I walked around and looked at it, and I thought, this is too perfect for our needs. So I walked over to City Hall and spoke to the then city manager. And I said, I found my building. And he said, I think I know which one it is. So I took over what was, like I said, an upholstery house. But originally, the building I'm in now was the home of the Indio Daily Post, the old local newspaper. The building was built in the late 40s. It's approximately 17,000 square feet. So I took it over and have changed it into a space where, even though art is exhibited here, the main purpose of this organization is to allow people to work and to make the art. So it really is a large series of studio spaces where people do what they do best. So I have painters, I have got jewelry makers, I've got experimental sculptors, I've got a 85-year-old woman who does enameling, I've got a woman who does welding and metal sculpture, I've got one, two, three people who do fused glass in the kiln. And then we have a hot glass or glass blowing studio. We're the only hot glass studio between Los Angeles and San Diego. So when things are normal, this place is really hopping. And now that things are beginning to get almost back to normal, I do have people coming into their studios working. So it's no longer dead. For almost the past year, I've been here every day by myself. But now I've got some people coming back and they're making their work again. So our vitality is beginning to come back. So I'm going to take you, as I said, on a real quick tour of how this building has changed from what was originally a printing facility to what is now a community art center. And please, while I'm doing this, if you have questions, interrupt me and ask, because I forget. I forget a lot of what I should be telling you. So if you have questions, just speak up, please. Coachella Valley Art Center, as I said, was a printing facility. The building was built in 1949. And interestingly enough, this building was the prototype for small town presses in California. It was added on to over the years, but the original footprint was a prototype. This is what I took over in the beginning. Of course, immediately I had to put the name CBAC, the initials of the Coachella Valley Art Center on the wall just to make it mine. But the door, we are on Town Street, 45140 Town. We are two doors north of City Hall. So I'm right here downtown. The building is owned by the city. I lease it from the city. for $1 a year, which is a great deal as far as lease amounts go. But the organization, the Coachella Valley Arts Center, has to maintain the building and everything that is associated with it after that, i.e. utilities, water, gas, et cetera, insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's really our responsibility. But when we first moved in, there was an artist in La Quinta, Larry Cush, who liked our logo. And so he came over and sandblasted the front window with the logo. So the place would have some era of distinction. I took the gallery, the exhibition space in the front of the building, I took, which was where remnants were kept, fabric samples, office, small office spaces. I changed all those spaces into exhibition spaces. So on the left, you can see what was an office, and then we turned it into a more intimate space for showing work. Again, storage and closets, and you'll see how this place really has changed. The work that you saw, that you see on the right, for about 3 years, I hosted the annual lunch and an exhibition of works by clients of the Riverside County Mental Health Department. So up until that point, they really didn't have their work shown in a professional manner. So I made sure that the exhibition was hung professionally, and it stayed up for the month of May, because that is my expertise is installation and museum studies. That's why I got my degree from Cal State Fullerton. As Bob mentioned, I came back to school after I came home from Vietnam. And I was gonna be a history teacher, but I took an art class and it changed my entire life. So I changed majors and have been doing it ever since. And have any of you been in this building?
No.
Yes.
I have. You were good. Kind enough to store all of the law school books there for a long time. So I loaded and unloaded through your back door. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. I was just thinking about that the other day for some reason. I don't know why. It's important for a community art organization, art-oriented organization, to address all the disciplines. So we do... we try to do that as much as we can. This was on the left storage, but then we came in and we had a small stage built where we were doing performance pieces, music, readings, things like that. And I still have a band that comes in during the week and rehearses. And they're called the Desert Crows. Or the Old Crows. I can't remember which. Bunch of older guys that play good rock and roll. So if you're looking for a band, they really are good. And they love to play.
So, Bill, I'm going to ask you for how I can contact them, because we do have that fundraiser coming up. And we would like to have some music on ground. So
send me an email.
I made a note for myself.
Send me an email and okay. I'll send you, his name is John Grounds. I'll send you his contact info.
Great, thanks.
Yeah. In the early days, we were holding, I made the space available for guitar lessons to autistic kids. And they would come in and do their lessons here. So, you're seeing it. I mean, I have almost forgotten how raw it really was. But it started off small. You know, we're a small organization. I'm the only one here, really, that can be counted as quote unquote staff. We are a nonprofit organization, but we're not overly sophisticated. We do, and I like to think we do at least, do things and show work that no one else in the valley shows. I try to do things. My motto is I like to show good work that has not been seen and good work that no one else will show. So I'm a very contemporary art-oriented individual. So that means that I try to show work that is challenging and thoughtful. And sometimes, oftentimes not easy, but that's really the reason why art exists, is to make you think, to address issues, if indeed that's the reason the person does it. Then we started getting bigger, and I've often worked with the Scrap Gallery, which is now in Cathedral City. And so we would have kids come in, and they make art and objects using existing materials, things that would normally be thrown out. So they would come in and have a great time. And as you can see in the middle of the picture, that's Frida. When she was a kitten, we have two studio cats who roam the building and are always here. And when people come in to work, even now when classes are, the cats are here because this is their home. And it really has established a certain feeling, a certain emotional feeling about this location. The building itself has great energy, but there's something about having a live animal on site that is really very, really, it's stimulating to a lot of folks. One of my resident artists, I have 12 resident artists right now because I have 12 spaces to use. And one of them is Mary Foote. In this photograph, Mary's in the distance and her husband Cliff is in the foreground. But Mary is a retired, I guess she was a representative, sales rep for pattern maker, Butterick Patterns. When people used to make clothes, they always used patterns. And Mary worked for probably one of the largest pattern makers in the country, Butterick. And she loves metal. She likes welding and building things out of metal. And so if you saw Mary on the street, you would think, oh, who is this finely coiffed, manicured woman? And then she comes into the studio and walks out black with soot and everything else on her. But she built an Eiffel Tower for a project that I was working on. And she built it out of rebar. And when she went to buy some more rebar, the guy said, what are you doing with this stuff? And she told him, he says, oh no, no one can do that. Well, she did. And the Eiffel Tower sits on top of the building now. And that was a number of years ago. Here we're back to the kids. I try to cooperate with other organizations in the Valley. And when we can, We've always had the Palm Springs Art Museum junior docents come down and they spend a day in the kiln glass studio making small glass objects using squares of glass, glass powder, wire, whatever, and then we fire it. And once they're fired and cooled, they can take them. But they learn the properties of glass, how to use it, how not to use it, et cetera. The objects that you see, the object in the foreground, which is like a cathedral in ruins with imagery, that is all cast. That was done in the kiln. It took a long while to do. Some objects that go into the kiln, I have one of my artists making an object now. It will be in the kiln for the month of March. Because you have to, on kiln glass, you have to bring your temperature up very slowly. Cook it, and then bring your temperature down very slowly. And if you open up the door, that instant of normal air will crack and destroy the piece. So kiln glass, it's not as exciting, as sexy as hot glass is, but you can do some remarkable stuff because you can see you can become architectural with it. And the imagery, there are copiers where you take your image, put it into the copier, and the copy that comes out is made from fine glass powder. You take your copy, you sandwich it between two pieces of clear glass, you fire that, and it becomes a permanent copy. And this artist, Patrick Blythe, who was actually the first artist to join me here, had his quote unquote stained glass windows made like that. Patrick unfortunately passed on, but he had enough vision. Sometimes he would say, I'm as nuts as you are for doing this, but he helped this place grow. And then in our hot glass studio, which we only do during the winter months, because when you have a furnace that you can see is white hot, it's throwing 2,800 degrees at you, it gets warm, even in winter with the roll-up door open and the fans going. So in the winter months, hot glass happens. And we give hot glass classes, how to blow glass, how to make things out of molten glass. The blue box is where the molten glass is kept. That goes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week during the season. And then the glory hole is on the left where you put your molten glass in, make it even hotter. And then on the end of the tube, is a blowhole, and you go in, and that's where you start your blowing. One of my future projects, hopes for the hot glass studio, is to start a program for veterans, especially veterans with PTSD. Because as a veteran myself, I know, especially men, they are very reluctant to ask for help. And when you're blowing glass, you cannot do it by yourself. You must have a team member, one or two, and you must ask for help. Because that's the nature of blowing glass. So my thoughts are that if you learn how to ask for help in the glass studio, you realize that asking for help is not as hard as you thought it was. And you can translate that to the rest of your life. So I have been researching, and I have found a handful of people who are willing to come down and help with that program. It's just as with all things in the nonprofit world, finding the money to do it, because blowing glass is not cheap. Glass in general is not cheap. I mean, when you've got that furnace going and the gas is going, you know, in the summer months, my gas bill is $3. In the winter months, the gas bill goes up to almost $1,000. So you can see. Palm Springs Art Museum docents come down and we do demonstrations and lectures about glass, because the museum has a very fine glass collection. And when you're giving a tour of the glass collection, it's almost vital that you know how the objects are made. And Ed's good enough where he can, if he can't do it, he can explain how some of the objects in the collection were done. And every year we have been doing at least twice an open studio day for the public. And we always have demonstrations all day long. And this is because people love to sit there and watch people blow glass. And this lady, her name is Jessica Yeager. She lives in Los Angeles, but she's paired with the Art Center. And she comes down and blows glass during open studio days. She actually, we worked with her on doing a GoFundMe project, and she raised enough money to buy a mobile hot shop. It's a small glory hole, and she can go around. It's in a small little trailer, and she can go around to different locations now and do glass blowing demonstrations. As I mentioned earlier, we do exhibitions. This lady, her artist name is Kika. Her real name is Joyce Hirohata, and the Kika comes from her two Japanese grandmothers. And Joyce works with objects that she finds in her yard. So those are bougainvillea blossoms that she puts into a mold and then pours a medium into the mold, and it dries. And it's still delicate, but you can see, I mean, it's still blossoms. She also, this is why I loved her work in the beginning. Those objects, except for the red object on the left, the other objects are old stuffed animals, children's stuffed animals that she takes and rolls in adhesive and then rolls into the desert dirt. So they become like a hardened skin out of desert dirt. We do community programs for groups that want to come in and hold their meetings or whatever else they need to do. And this is a shot from, there was a storytelling project that went around the valley, and we were the beginning of it. Here's some of Mary's finer work. The cylinders are old mufflers that she doctored up with solder. And then the piece on the left is her homage to Oscar de la Renta, her favorite designer. And it's, the skirt is made of wire mesh with bolts, nuts and bolts. And the top is made of chicken wire, mesh, and crystals from an old chandelier. Every now and then we do exhibitions of CBAC artists, not all the time. The piece on the left in the foreground is Paul Messick, who paints with enamels on glass sheets and then fuses those sheets together to give you a three-dimensional quality.
Wow.
Paul's been using the gallery space up front since the pandemic has hit to film his instructional videos on how he works. Again, community groups coming in to have meetings. Since, you know, Indio has the COD campus right down the street from me, so they come every year. The art teacher brings them down. They spend an afternoon here. They visit the studios, and they look at the gallery or whatever, you know, if there's an exhibition up, and then they need to do an assignment based on it. But the idea for kids to see how professional artists work and the spaces they work in, it can be very eye-opening. The image on the left is a group of ladies. Most of them actually live in Indio. They're called Art on the Edge, and they come in once a month to experiment with new techniques. And the image on the right is a group of there's a young African-American girl who lives in Desert Hot Springs who comes down and does clay classes. The Ross Foundation in Los Angeles. At one of our open studio days, the president of the foundation and their director of grants happened to come in and were walking around. And before they left, he came up and said, you know, this is really remarkable what you're doing. I urge you to apply to the foundation for some money for a program for kids. So I did, and they were generous and funded a 5-week program last summer where every week was a different discipline. And so it was designed for high school kids. But being the softy that I am, I let some elementary school kids in. But they learned, they had a week of drawing. That was a prerequisite of the grant, that there must be a class of drawing, because the president of the foundation worked with a fellow who was head of design for GM. And the man from GM said, one of his pet peeves in life is that kids or people that come to work don't know how to draw. It's all computerized. What do you do if the electricity goes out? So he said, you can apply, but you must have drawing. So we had a week of drawing. We had a week of painting, abstract painting. We had a week of painting with image transfer, a week of printmaking, etching. And these images are from the week of how to make a mold and cast glass objects. So the instructor was Weston Lambert, who used to teach at Tulane University and now is in Seattle. He came in and taught the kids how to make molds, how to use glass powders, chunks of glass, how to cut glass safely, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The safety issues that were associated with glass. On the left is the transfer class. On the right is the painting class, the critiques. The idea of sitting down and talking about someone's work, being rational, honest, and fair without being negative. Negativity was not allowed in the critiques. It's easy to be negative about someone's work. It's difficult to find good in things you don't like. And that's one of the things we try to stress, is that you may not like the piece, but there's something in it that is good. Find that and talk about that. So it was that kind of lesson, and plus the idea of conversing with a contemporary about how they work, why they did what they did, et cetera. And of course, one of my favorite things to do is annually I do an exhibition of work by artists who are veterans. These two slides. On the left is Michael Aschenbrenner, who lives in Alta Loma, who is a glass artist, who is back to clay because glass became too difficult for him. And on the right is William Marquez, who I will admit to you is me. William Marquez is my exhibiting name. And these two pieces have to do with both Michael and my time in Vietnam. Michael was, when we were in Vietnam at the same time. He was 18 years old, I was 20. Michael was shot in the leg and stranded for 2 days. And when he came back home, got out of the hospital, and started his artistic career, he decided that he would make bones out of glass. And that's really what made him famous. He's in some fine museum collections around the country because of these bones. But they are based on his leg bone, the bone that was injured in the war. My work, when I do a piece about Vietnam, my self-imposed rule is that it must have 420 components to it, one component for each day that I was there. And the piece that I did for this show was called Death or DD214. And there are 420 strands of dyed yarn hanging from the ceiling with a lean-to that refers back to the Vietnamese huts. And the title, Death or DD214, pertains to the obvious, that when you're in a war, you can be killed. But if you live and you come home, the thing that you are given is a form DD214. Allowing you to process out of the military. So if you have the DD214, that means you survive. Here's Michael on the right with his new work. He's back, as I mentioned, he's back to clay because the bones that he were making, some of them were like up to 100 pounds. And they were done from the molten glass, not cast. So he's gone back to clay because it's lighter and he enjoys it. And that's where he started with clay. And on the left, the images are from Amber Hoy, who I met as a panel member in Sacramento for the State Arts Council. And these are the drawings. I don't have up close shots, but they're drawings of her time in Iraq. Again, referencing veterans, I collaborated with the Coachella Valley History Museum on Ways of Remembering, where we had three veterans from different wars, Vietnam, Korea, and World War II, that were represented by panels with text of comments that those veterans made about their time in the war And the title wall, I did out of window screen with the name. And on the pedestal is a World War II roll-up mattress. That's what the guys used to sleep on. Contemporary veteran Richard Stenbaum was in Iraq and Afghanistan. He's a glass artist. These are cast. On the left is the brain grenade, and on the right is the heart grenade. And in my conversation with Richard, who suffers greatly from PTSD, and he told me, he said, Bill, if I did not have this work to do, I would be dead. I would have killed myself a long time ago. So this is the kind of work that Richard does to keep himself alive. And it's stunning. It's just stunning. Here's two more of my favorite guys. Michael Aschenbrenner and his bones. There were about 350 bones in the gallery. And then piece on the right is one of the first things I ever did about Vietnam, actually. And it was Quang Tri, 1968-69, 420 days in war. We lived on the dirt. So I had a dirt ground. We lived behind sandbags, and each circle was crushed charcoal representing death. And each circle's circumference was the same circumference of the 105 howitzer shell, since I was with the 105 howitzer unit up on the DMZ. I'm self-indulgent, I suppose. When I want, because once I have the building and I want to do something, I can do it. But I was having coffee with a friend of mine it's been about 2 years ago, Michael Petrie, who's the director of the Museum of Contemporary Art in London. And Michael, like myself, is a Mexican, or at least half Mexican, we're both half Mexican. And he's from Texas. And we were sitting having coffee, and he just blurted out all of a sudden, did you know they used to have lynch Mexicans in this country? No, I didn't. So I did some research. I found a book called Silent Witness. And it was about the lynching of Mexicans in the United States between 1825 and 1920. And in that time period, 2,850 Mexicans were lynched in the United States. Bob mentioned earlier that my ancestors were Mexican, a Mexican land-grant family that came to California and established El Rancho Boca de Santa Monica, which incorporated Santa Monica, the Palisades, parts of Malibu, and Brentwood, and they were ranchers, and it was 6,600 acres, and they were here while these lynchings were going on, because in California the lynchings happened all the way from Sacramento down to Los Angeles, and it just struck me. I mean, my God, what did these people think? How did they feel? And I was so emotionally overwhelmed by the information, I had to do something about it. So this exhibition was called 149, Contemporary Thoughts on the Lynching of Mexicans in California, 1848 to 1895. And I had 149 insinuations of bodies hanging from the ceiling over a dirt floor. Superstructure was a piece of some chicken wire. It was wrapped in wool, and then each body was given a bath of milk paint, the same color as dried blood. It was a very, very difficult project to do. It was a difficult project for people to look at. I had people come in who were in tears. I had people come in who they couldn't stay more than a minute. It was powerful, but it needed to be done. And I did everything purposefully. I mean, even the dirt on the floor, because these people were hung from trees out in the open. So it couldn't be over a concrete floor. It had to have dirt. The image on the left, you can see in the background, there is a single image or single hanging object. She was by herself because California has the dubious distinction of having lynched the first woman. So she was totally by herself. But the milk paint that I used, because of the wool that I used, it was all given to me by Berkeley Ergonomics in Ontario, California. They're a mattress factory. And they give their remnants to artists and arts organizations to use as long as you send them images of what you've done with it. Well, when I sent Berkeley these images, they just, they loved them because it spoke. But the milk paint, because the wool has not been treated, the milk paint just sits on the surface of the wool. So if people came in and touched, they walked away with blood on their hands. I love that idea because it really made people think. Now, what have we been doing during the COVID pandemic? This is what we're doing. Since we can't do things inside, I went to the outside of the building. So you can drive by or you can walk by, but it's on the north wall of the Art Center. And I invited 7 artists. I gave them each 2 pieces of 4x8 plywood. They could do whatever they wanted with it. So what you'll see are what creative people do during hard times. The project is called Artist's Comment. So whatever they did is their comment on something. And I had a banner made that explains what their comment is. Excuse me. But this is what's happening now on the outside. And we're having an open air reception on March 21st from 2 to 5. So if you would like to come by and see in person and meet the artists, please do. 4 of the artists are from the Valley. 3 artists are from the graduate program at Otis College of Art and Design in Los Angeles, because I truly believe in getting students and young people involved in real world situations. So this is an opportunity for them to come and do something alongside professionals. That's what the Coachella Valley Art Center is doing and has been all about.
Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed that. I'm going to be doing some more of these in the future. And so until next time, bye-bye.